Joining us now is Wendy Patrick, political analyst. Good morning, Wendy. How are you?
Hi, good.
Let's talk about the White House and its current state as it seems to be leaking like a sieve. What is the source? Is it disgruntled staffers of Trump, or is it leftovers from the Obama administration?
You know, the answer almost depends on who you ask. You know, Trump speculates, oh, it's holdovers from the prior administration. But who knows? I mean, we're talking about such serious leaks. You know, I mean, obviously some of them are fairly mundane, watching a television in his bathroom at night. We all do that. Some of them are very serious. The details of conversations with other world leaders, nobody wants that to be leaked. But in terms of who's doing it, boy, this investigation that's now ongoing, we all hope we get to the bottom of this. Nobody wants to see national security or national secrets compromised for whatever incentive the leakers might have. Everybody hopes we find them.
And so how many of Obama's people are still there, though? That's the real question. I mean, percentage-wise, what members of the staff are left?
Yeah, I mean, they don't release numbers like that, and we don't know. And you know, it's funny, most people didn't think there were any until this came up. And, of course, that's been the allegation. Well, it's those people. Many administrations clean house faster than others. Some want a more succession planning. But remember that that's what the transition period was for. Regardless of whether it's old administration, new administration, the fact that somebody has the incentive to do this is one thing. And the fact that they have the means to do it might be even scarier. Because we live in a day and age where leaks and compromise of integrity really can be very dangerous. So we want the White House run like a tight ship, not a sinking ship. And the fact that this leak problem has come to the forefront so quickly, I believe that's heartening, and that's even a quicker reason to fix it sooner rather than later.
And so it's funny, you mentioned things as mundane as watching television in his bathrobe. But then Spicer comes out and makes it a big deal, saying he doesn't even own a bathrobe. I'm pretty sure the White House comes with bathrobes.
And I wonder how he knows that Donald Trump doesn't have a bathrobe. I mean, it's silly. We're laughing about this. What the White House would say is that talking about issues like this are overshadowing some of the good things that the Trump administration is doing, some of the positive efforts that they're making. So, you know, when you talk about a news cycle, it's often dominated by the sensational instead of the sensible. And hopefully we can get back to talking about not whether staffers can find the light switches in different rooms in the White House or what Donald Trump wears at night when he goes to bed, but what we're talking about moving forward as a country. That let's let President Trump focus on those things and the issue at hand.
But my thing is that it was the press secretary who made it an issue rather than just moving on from it.
Your point's a good one. You know, the press secretary should focus on what's most important for the country. But again, he has to make nice with the media and the press. Some of the people that attend his briefings are asking about things that I am sure Don Spicer would rather not spend time talking about. His job is hard enough when it comes to talking about serious issues, but he's also got to field some of these other issues as well. So, you know, I wouldn't want to be in his shoes. We seem to be talking about him quite a lot, but my goodness, what a job he has to do every day, talking about the mundane as well as the serious.
And I think this job might be too much for Spicer, because you said he needs to make nice, and he doesn't seem capable of it, including, I believe it was yesterday, people were reporting, their outlets reporting that he went into full SNL mode, Melissa McCarthy, like he channeled the caricature of him, just being abrasive and aggressive.
Like, you know, he's got such a tough job. He is defensive, in a word. That has characterized much of what I've seen from day one. He is defensive. Let's give him a little more time in a very, very difficult position and see if he can warm into the hot seat, or if, and I know we've already heard and read these rumblings, or if perhaps there isn't some way of sharing that very hot button position with somebody else that maybe has a better relationship or can cultivate an easier relationship with the media.
Yeah, I think that abrasive and aggressive stance just doesn't suit that position. You know, it'd be like me being passive and just accepting what everybody says as fact in this position rather than questioning and having conversations. It just doesn't work.
That's right. It doesn't work. And you're right. There's a different role and there's a different personality that needs to be perhaps more tailored to that role. Can Sean change things up to suit this new role? he probably should be trying, and I'll bet that he is behind the scenes. You know, we don't see what happens behind the scenes. Except, again, we read that leak about Donald Trump critiquing his performance. I mean, as if the pressure isn't strong enough on Sean Spicer. So I'm gonna give him a break and say let's you know talk about this again and see if perhaps he can work it out to where it's a little less contentious. Maybe we won't see any more Saturday Night Live skits. Maybe we'll see a better relationship with he and the media. Everybody would want that, including the media outlets, because they want to accurately report as well.
We're speaking with political analyst and author of Reading People, Wendy Patrick. So if they can discover, because there's the Twitter accounts that have popped up from other sources, whether it's the parks or interior of the White House, if they can discover who it is and it's revealed that these are actually Trump staffers who have gone rogue or stand against a lot of what he's doing, what does that say and how does that reflect on the administration?
Well, poorly. You know, I mean, the administration no doubt engaged in very significant vetting, but somehow people like this got through, if in fact they're not holdovers. Sean Spicer did say, and this is one of the things that I think a lot of the media outlets were interested in, is that it appears that there's breaches of both policy and law. Now, we don't know any details about that, and obviously, you know, he's not at liberty to share everything with us, but there should be very, and no doubt will be, very significant sanctions once they determine who it is that's doing the leaking. And I have confidence they will. I mean, we're all optimistic about this because we want to be able to see a president run the country without fear of all of these inside mechanics being shared with the general public.
But if you see them clamp down on it for policy reasons or legal reasons, and we see Kellyanne Conway kind of skate on her endorsement of purchasing Ivanka's products, is that a bit of a hypocrisy there?
Well, we're talking about two different things, you know, ethics versus legality. It's often one and the same, and sometimes it isn't, as with Kellyanne's comments. Very unfortunate. I think she learned a very hard lesson. You know, she made a mistake. I think she was the first to acknowledge that. The president apparently took her apology. I mean, the way she said it was so blatant that she obviously didn't know. Lots of people make mistakes like that. It's very early in the administration. I guess we'd probably say it's better that she make a mistake like that now than later. But you're right that the seriousness of it has been underscored by conflicts of interest being a significant issue that's plagued the first couple of weeks of this campaign. So it was a mistake that was highlighted by the acrimonious court of public opinion anyway, that this is just one of many conflicts of interest that the president has.
Yeah, and I'm reluctant to just put it off as a mistake. As it is, there's an actual ethics law. It's codified that you can't actually do that. And ignorance isn't a defense when it... ignorance of the law...
Not legally, it's not. Legally, it's not.
Right.
But that's the thing, is we're talking about ethics versus law. Now, ignorance is never a defense to anything, but what it does is it affects punishment. It affects sanctions legally. It affects sanctions ethically as well. Nobody's condoning that what she did was right. Everybody is saying she shouldn't have said it. But what we're talking about now is what should the penalty be? What should the punishment be? She was counseled. That's probably not a bad word choice. Nobody quite knows what that means. but what should happen besides counseling? Is a talking to enough? That is no doubt the subject of this. And it's not really an investigation. We don't need to investigate it. She said it on national television. But they're looking into what should be the proper penalty for those words. Not whether it was right or wrong, and you're right, ignorance is never an excuse, but the fact that she said it and obviously didn't know any better, should that be a mitigating factor in deciding what should happen to her? The consensus from the Trump administration seems to be yes.
And it's interesting you said we don't know what counsel means, and it's there are people that are going to wonder whether or not it was a stern talking to or a kind of a wink, wink, don't do that again.
And it probably was not the latter, given the statement that Kellyanne Conway made afterwards, where she basically said, I wish every woman gets an opportunity to have a boss like President Trump. So, you know, her motive was not to make money off the deal or even make Ivanka money. It seemed to be sticking up for her. That seemed to be the flavor of the comments she made. But I got to tell you, she is not going to be making that mistake yet.
Political analyst and author of Reading People, Wendy Patrick. Wendy, give me a quick synopsis of Reading People.
Oh, you know, it is what it sounds like. It's a book about, you know, the kinds of things you look at when you're interacting with somebody else. My more recent book, Red Flags, talks about, you know, judging the person behind the persona, looking at some of the other factors. What do they like to do? Who do they associate with, etc.? To not only learn the person behind the persona, but to separate, as I say, the dangerous from the desirable.
Wendy, with our brief with our brief conversation and those two books of yours, you have to rate me either positive or negative based on our short conversation here. What would you give me?
You get a thumbs up in my book. Your questions are great. Your demeanor is great, too. You get a big thumbs up. You're the desirable column.
Thank you, Wendy. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
888-574-2723. You hear that, people? Political analyst and author Wendy Patrick gives me a thumbs up, which when juxtaposed against this...
Oh, you are such an ass.
I do that because Christian enjoys it. 888-574-2723 is the number into the studio. Interesting conversation with Wendy there, especially when it comes to Kellyanne Conway, because we don't know what the motivations were, and she could very well just be sticking up for her. But the thing is, there's such a mistrust, at least from my end, when Conway comes out and says that, you know, I'm glad to be a woman working for Donald Trump. I wonder if that is, knowing him and knowing about him what we know, his need for his ego to be massaged, whether or not that was a statement crafted by him or in order to make him feel better. And the thing is, again, I think that ignorance isn't an excuse. And you just have to assume. I've never held political office, but this goes back to common sense, cleaning off the roof of your car and knowing that in a position of elected office, you can't go endorsing things. It's just like here on the radio. Like I just can't go endorsing things because this is my show, the airwaves that I'm broadcasting on are not mine. They're Connoisseur Media's, and we have things that we have to go through in order for that. Speaking of, contact our sales department if you're interested in having me endorse your product. 888-574-2723. Up next, we're going to talk to Dr. Lisa Palmer about cell phone addiction. Do you suffer from it? Most likely. If you have a smartphone, you probably do. We'll be right back on Ed Says here on the Talk of Connecticut. Welcome back to Ed Says. We're about to talk to psychotherapist Dr. Lisa Palmer about cell phone addiction and how to break the habit. Are you addicted to your cell phone? When you are sitting, say, on the couch watching a program, are you only half watching it? Is your nose in your phone? Or are you compelled to grab that phone every few minutes to see what's going on? I'm guilty of it. I do it between breaks here, checking email and everything. And I want to break the habit. There are times when I sit down on the couch and I'm tired and it's just easy to scroll through and mindlessly do things. Or maybe I'll play Force Arena, where I get to be Boba Fett and fight other people across the globe and normally lose. But then I remind myself, oh, I have a 3-year-old right there who wants to build castles with me. So maybe we should use his these little magnetic building shapes he has, and I'll sit on the floor and do that because that is more satisfying. The phone will always be there. Part of it, I will blame on this job, feeling the need to always be informed. But the majority of it, that's my fault. And it's a difficult habit to break. And joining us now is Dr. Lisa Palmer, psychotherapist, to talk about cell phone addiction and how we can break it. Good morning, Dr. Palmer. How are you?
Good morning. Bright and sunny down here in sunny South Florida.
Way to rub it in. I'm sitting here in 18 inches of snow.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's not fun. It was a terrible commute. Meanwhile, you're probably out on the beach soaking up rays while you're talking to me.
Right. Nice idea, but not quite.
Now, do you have your cell phone in your hand is the question. Are you checking Twitter while we're doing this?
Hey, you know what? That may not be out of the realm of possibility. It seems like we're always on our phones. It's like everything is connected to our phone, social media. I'm constantly getting text messages. It's happening. I mean, even when I'm on the radio, sometimes these buzzes come in, and it's like, I can't get away from it, you know? So a lot of people have this problem, and they don't even realize that they have an addiction to the phone because it's such a normal thing to be on your phone all of the time.
And
but
so
we're so tired and wired.
I'm a technology fan, and at times people will post pictures of people waiting for the subway, and they're all looking at their phones. And they go, look, this is an example of us being addicted to our phones. But if you go back 100 years when people were waiting for their trains, they all had the newspapers out. So in that regard, isn't it just a modern-day information device that we just have at all times rather than, I guess, those special times when we had the newspaper?
Hey, you know what? That's a really good point, actually. It's just like a distraction for a lot of us, right? But listen, a lot of us are going to bed with our phones. I mean, how many of us lay in bed at night, you know, go on YouTube, look at the news, read tweets, and we, before you know it, we're falling asleep with our phone, our phones in our bed. So I don't know how normal that is, but it's happening. It's happening, and there's this instant gratification of, you know, I need a response. I need a response right now. So it's like that pressure on us to constantly be attached to our emails, our text messages. People get angry if they message you and then they don't hear from you within a few minutes.
You are absolutely correct. That happened to me the other day, specifically with my wife, who is, I know, is constantly on her phone. And when it takes her more than 5 minutes to reply to me, it maddens me because I know it's right there with her. And I know what her day is like. And I know that she can probably respond. And it's irrational and it's silly. Because if it's that important, have we lost the art of conversation? If something's really that important, shouldn't you just call? Isn't that what your phone is, a telephone?
But, Ed, it's so easy to send a text message. You know, it's just like sometimes you just, like, don't want to talk on the phone. I know that for myself, I'm talking to people all day, and it's just so lovely to come home and just chat with my friends on text because I can talk to them without having to, like, talk to them. You know what I mean? It's great. I love it, but some people just don't like it because the messages get all mixed up. And it's so easy for someone to misinterpret when
right.
you're sending
and,
a text.
And then you accidentally send that.
They put their own tone on it.
You accidentally send that nude picture to your buddy instead of the girl you're trying to woo. Like, these things happen.
Oh, no.
You
won't be finding me sending any nude pictures. There's none of that in my phone. But you know what? That's another thing. A lot of people are having risky pictures in their phone, and these pictures are being sent out. But, we have to be careful. We have to look at our behaviors. We've got to set boundaries with our phone. If you're finding that your cell phone bills are really high, maybe it's time to cut down on your phone. If you're finding that you're having withdrawals because you don't, you know, get a Wi-Fi connection and you have a preoccupation, you're sleeping with your phone, you're getting text neck. People get text neck. Because they're looking down at their phone all the time, you may not be too happy about that, but your chiropractor might be.
One of the things that concerns
me... probably making more money.
Right, definitely. One of the things that concerns me is this blurring of your private and your public or professional time. The idea that since you have this device that puts you in contact all hours of the day, that employers now seem to take advantage of it. And I'm able to make the separation that unless it's an emergency, you get me for the hours a day you pay for me, and then that's it.
Oh, boy, that's such a good point, Ed. I mean, the boundaries have to be set. And I know that my patients know that unless it's an emergency, they don't text me. But a lot of people are, I had a friend the other day. She's like, I'm constantly getting emails from my boss all the time. He sends like 30 emails a day, and it wears and tears on some people to have to respond constantly to emails, and it's very, very disruptive. So it's a really good point that you're making. You know, you have to separate your personal time from your professional time, and this is a way that we remain healthy and we remain balanced and happy in life and feeling free. Because for God's sake, we're constantly being attached to our phones and almost like a ball and chain.
And how do you communicate to, say, an employer or a boss that their emails are too much, like someone who gets 20 emails a day, or that their emails are not only multiple but terse and they don't really explain anything? They're not detailed enough. How do you do that?
It depends on your boss, right, and how you would have to communicate to them your communication style. But you could just simply tell them, hey, you know what, usually after this time, I don't have service. How about that?
My internet shuts off at 6.
My house has no service. You know, it's like in a tunnel. So, you know, if I don't respond, that's the reason why. And eventually, you know, with that, they'll understand I have to message them between this time and that time. Or no. You said this is family time. I have to spend time with my family. This is me time. So when you start to set boundaries with other people like that, they begin to understand after a while that, hey, this is just the way it is, and it's nothing personal, but that's their habit, their behaviors, and I have to accommodate to that.
And how far along are we in research when it comes to the dangers of this cell phone addiction? Because let's be honest, smartphones are still relatively new. What if we're at 15 years of them, maybe? We've had cell phones, but the kind of access that we have with smartphones is fairly new. Are we still discovering the downsides?
We are still discovering the downside, that sometimes if somebody, you know, has anxiety or depression, whatever their motivations are for using the cell phone would determine if they may be more likely to develop anxiety and depression or negative consequences mood-wise from using their phone. But if they're just using their phone because it's like entertainment or they're bored, chances are that the phone's not going to have a negative effect on their mood, but it still make them addicted to it. So the research is fairly new, and there a lot of the research is based on looking at about how many times people are using their cell phones a day, which on average people send about 100 texts a day. An average person texts their smartphone about 190 times a day. So it's quite a bit of time that we're spending on our phone, and newer research has showed that college students are spending about 9 hours a day on their phone.
Oh my.
It's a lot.
How do you get anything else done? It just seems like the majority of your day. Dr. Lisa Palmer, thank you for your time. Enjoy the sunshine down there, and we'll save you some snow up here.
Thank you so much.
Have a great day. 888-574-2723, the number into the studio. It's a hard thing to do. I guarantee you, as soon as I go to break, I'm going to grab my phone and check my email when I don't really need to. Nobody is saving lives here in radio, unless it's emergency information. Like, we're just trying to entertain you and give you information. We're not doctors. We're not that important. One of the games we like to play when a bunch of us go out to dinner is credit card roulette, where you throw a bunch of credit cards in a hat, and whoever gets drawn has to pay the bill. The new way of doing it is you stack your cell phones in the center of the table, and the first person to go for their cell phone has to pay the bill. And I think that's a great idea, because how often, and I'm as guilty of it as anyone else, how often are you out with a group of people and you're supposed to be enjoying each other's company, and you dig into your pocket and you slyly under the table, you're like, oh, what's the score? Oh, my buddy just texted me. It takes a lot of work for you to ignore that beep or that vibrate and go, you know what, I'm doing something else and I'll get to it. Because those people that have gone out of their way to spend time with you in the moment are probably a bit more important. As we all know by now, a federal appeals panel has maintained the freeze on the immigration order from President Trump, meaning those barred refugees and citizens from the seven countries can continue entering the United States. It was unanimous 3-0 opinion from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, 29-page opinion written, rejecting the government's argument that suspension of the order should be lifted immediately for national security reasons. And, of course, it's always about security. It's all about fear-mongering. In just a moment, we will be joined by Fox News Radio's Rachel Sutherland. She'll bring us the latest on it. One thing I saw that was interesting was that Donald Trump tweeted and quoted from a law journal called Lawfare, saying, quote, this is a quote from an article, remarkably, in the entire opinion, the panel did not bother to even cite the statute, end quote. Implying that they didn't cite it, which undercuts them. Now, the guy who wrote it, Benjamin Witz, said, you decide whether the president is quoting me in context. Here's the article. For the record, I support the decision. So I believe what the author was trying to say was, it was so blatantly clear that they should do what they did that they didn't even have to cite it, whereas Trump read it as, that they didn't cite it. Therefore, it's a disgrace. Joining us now is Fox News Radio's Rachel Sutherland. Good morning, Rachel. How are you?
I'm well, Ed. How are you doing?
Doing all right. Did you guys get snow down there?
No, not really. A little north and west of Washington, but down in Northern Virginia area, which you're familiar with, is one of those where it just barely missed us, which is just fine with me.
Oh, you're very lucky. I was spent 3 hours yesterday moving snow.
Oh, man, you must be sore.
I know. Can just talk to someone down there. Will you put in a good word for me just to get away from this?
Yeah, we'd love to have you back in the D.C. area.
The traffic. I can't handle the traffic. let's talk about the immigration ban, a 3-0 decision. Enough to get Hillary Clinton back on Twitter as she replied, or she tweeted 3-0 in response to the decision. Trump not happy about it, saying, hitting his caps lock, "We'll see you in court," even though the decision was already made in court. What do we see happening here? Will it be dropped? Will they go back and reword it? Or are they going to take this to the Supreme Court?
Yeah, there are a few options, Ed. You mentioned this idea of maybe going back and reworking the order. That's beginning to get a little more attention. In fact, Republican Senator James Lankford was just on Fox News Channel saying that he advised the White House that very thing, that instead of going back to court, they should rewrite the order with clarifications regarding green card holders. You'll remember that clarification was made, I guess, about 4 days later or sometime after the weekend where all mass chaos just broke out about this. And then he says it'll be more palatable to be able to push it out. But it makes me wonder. I would think maybe the courts might be more likely to uphold an order like that, but it's still going to get challenged. I can't imagine the other side just saying, okay, that's fine, and then moving along just with those clarifications.
And so one of the things I'm not clear on was that it seems rushed. It seems that it wasn't well thought out. And then Trump said that he fought for it to be held for 30 days before they rolled it out. What happened? Isn't this his baby? Why would he be forced to put the order into action if he wanted to wait 30 days?
Yeah, that's a little unclear at this point, Ed. I honestly am not sure what the backstory is on that, because it really just seemed, from an outside point of view, and we know it always looks different on the inside, but it seemed like he was running the whole show. But someone had to be running the show, because Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly apparently didn't know the ink was going to be dry on that until 24 hours before it happened, so he wasn't running the show. I don't know, Ed.
And what does this mean if he does decide to take it to the Supreme Court? As many people predict, it will end in a 4-4 tie, as we don't have the ninth judge there. And then that goes back to the Court of Appeals, and theirs stays in place.
Right.
So the question is whether or not Trump is willing to roll the dice on that, because if it does go 4-4, that will clearly be seen as a defeat for him when it comes to this.
Yeah, it's a risky move for them to go to the U.S. Supreme Court, but he does risky things. It could happen. The other option, aside from rewriting the order, is possibly going to a lower court or going before the entire Ninth Circuit, I believe it's 11 judges, and arguing on the merits of the ban itself. This ruling was specific to reinstating the ban, lifting that stay that the other judge in Seattle had put into place. So that's another strategy, is to take the order and argue on its merits entirely.
Well, and if they do that, one of the things that hasn't come up yet is his actual words about the ban when he went into detail about it being a Muslim ban, mm-hmm. which would give plenty of ammunition to the courts to probably override it again.
Right, based on the idea of religious discrimination, because of the things that he said when he was a candidate, and also because of the exclusions or priority, I should say, for Christian refugees over people of other faiths, whether it be Muslims, Hindu, Sikh, whatever. That would be handing a court a reason to strike it down.
And it just seems though he's any of these things, and we know his personality. He's defiant. He claims to win all the time, or will get tired of winning. Although his personal court cases normally end up in settlements, which he ends up paying. This is just a risky play for what could be considered ego on his part if it does get knocked down, even though he claims it to be for national security.
Right, and so it could. It could end up backfiring on him there, too. One thing this is really showing is, again, we forget sometimes about the judicial branch. We hear so much about Congress and the White House, we forget about the third branch of government until something like this happens. And it reminds us that, yeah, there are checks and balances. There is the separation of powers, and it's interesting to see it at work, although upsetting to a lot of folks who want to see this ban implemented. I think some recent polling is showing support for it. But I think a lot of people, Republicans, Democrats, whomever, have been very concerned about the way it was rolled out in particular.
Well, and at the same time, when you talk about those supporters, there are, according to a new survey, there are a margin of voters that believe the Bowling Green massacre shows why this immigration policy is needed.
Oh, Ed.
Yes, the Bowling Green massacre that never happened.
Okay, we can go on all that. But.
So we have to wonder, you know, you have to look at the source of the support. And you're right, people do forget about that branch, so much so because it had been removed from the White House website for hours one day until people pointed it out and it was brought back in the same state. Like it had legitimately, not only the page for it, but the drop-down menu only said the legislative and the executive branch. It no longer had the judicial drop-down. And I'm like, what's going on here? So maybe the courts caught wind of that as well and said, hey, don't forget, we're here too.
Yeah, well, give a link to an after-school special.
Well,
they still do those?
I saw somebody tweet that. Imagine what had happened if he had seen Schoolhouse Rock. If he had grown up watching Schoolhouse Rock, he might have known that this was a possibility. Rachel Sutherland, Fox News Radio, always a pleasure. Enjoy your no snow down there.
All right, Ed.
Bye. 888-574-2723, the number into the studio. Didn't even get to ask about the idea of the countries that are excluded, when, like Saudi Arabia. And I know we have ties to them that are problematic at times, but again, remember that a lot of the countries that were left off also have to do with Trump's business ties, of which he has not severed. We keep hearing we were promised that all of this would be put into a trust. We saw the folders, and everybody's fatigued. You're fatigued. I'm fatigued. But it's my job to talk about it. It's my job to expose it, and it's my job to point out how wrong it is. But every day it's seemingly something else, and we can't keep our focus. I mentioned Russia at the beginning of the show and how that we've lost our focus on that. I mean, that's kind of a big deal if Russia did not only influence our election, but if they were in contact with this administration about sanctions being lifted before the election. And we'll get to that around 11:30. We'll focus on that. And up next, your calls at 888-574-2723. And I'll also talk about verbal self-gratification, as that's pretty much what I was told I take part in at times. That is the number. If there's something you want to talk about, feel free to call it. Let's talk to Cyrus in Windsor. Good morning, Cyrus.
Yes, good morning. I'm a little bothered from your opinions. You keep saying to your logo that you are unbiased, but you are the most biased person I ever heard in my life. You are, I don't know what to say, but you're watching the wrong station, my friend.
This is
Talk of Connecticut.
Yes.
Let me speak before you speak, please. I keep listening to you for many, 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 many months, and I just had it.
Okay.
You're supposed to work for a station that supports America. You're not. You're supporting an enemy. And believe me, you don't belong in that station, okay? Yeah, you can laugh your heart out.
So, Cyrus, am I allowed to respond to these, or should I be writing them down?
Please listen to me.
No, Cyrus, hold on. Before you delve too deep into your complaints, let me register on two of them. First of all, okay. you only touched on part of my slogan, unbiased and unabashed. So when I say unbiased, it's unbiased in my reporting of the news. And unbiased in me going after whoever is doing something wrong. Just because I don't believe exactly in what you believe doesn't mean that those people that you idolize aren't doing something wrong. And unabashed comes in. Hold on. I gave you a moment. Now it's my moment. I say unabashed because I'm unabashed in my opinion and in my concern for how people perceive me. I couldn't care less if you like me. You don't necessarily have to agree with me. But for you to come on here, and yes, it is the talk of Connecticut in which I talk, but for you to come up on here and say I don't support America because you disagree with me is, first of all, insulting, and second of all, completely wrong. But please continue with your complaints.
Okay. You know what? I have a brother killed on the towers, okay? And that was an action from your friends.
My friends? What friends?
No, no, you keep saying
what friends?
About Islamists, okay? No, just a moment, okay?
I'm not going to hold on a moment when you're implying that terrorists that threw a plane at a building are my friends. That's asinine. You know what? Because you had a brother in the tower doesn't make it any different. I had friends who were in the Pentagon who thankfully survived. Don't forget, there were two other planes. Everybody focuses on the towers. There was a plane that hit the Pentagon. I grew up in that area, so I knew plenty of people. My sister works in New York City. I was worried about her. Everybody knows somebody affected by it. So don't try to use that as a defense.
I understand. Listen to me. I don't understand
because your point has no sense whatsoever. I am not a sponsor of terrorism. I am not a friend of terrorism. So where do you come with that asinine statement?
I like to hear that. Beautiful. I love that. But. If you believe it or not, Trump is our only hope. And I'm sorry I did not vote for him, but I'm sorry for that, because right now I see that he's our only hope that he can diminish those enemies and be our country again, peaceful, loving, and helping other countries.
How are we helping other countries when we're alienating our allies, including Mexico and Australia and potentially Canada?
We are not. We're not doing that. We are doing that.
The reports are in. Keep burying your head in the sand. You have not come with anything substantial except insults.
Okay, well, thank you for listening to me. Bye.
I just can't. This is the part of the job that I hate. For someone who says he has listened for months and couldn't take it anymore, he clearly has heard, but he hasn't listened. Because, one, I've explained unbiased and unabashed a million times. It's just like Fox saying, you know, fair and balanced, and everybody else with their stuff. It's cute. It's not 100% true. We all have biases. I'll admit to that. But I will go after a Democrat. I'll go after a Republican. I'll go after a man. I'll go after a woman if they're doing something wrong. And to imply that because you lost someone in the tower, in one of the towers, or on the ground when the towers came down, doesn't make your opinion any more valid than anybody else's. And that's just it. It's an opinion. I'm dealing in facts. The thought that Donald Trump is going to make us safer, it just blows my mind. By alienating our allies, you say that's not true. It's 100% true. Did you not? Every time he gets a chance, he insults Mexico and insists they're going to pay for the wall, which they're not. Australia, one of our great allies, a terse, short call. I don't understand it. I'm not coming with just made up information. This is all based on facts. I look at the facts and I make my opinion on them. And the fact is, this man is dangerous and you're buying into fear. 2001 was over 15 years ago. Where is this danger? We have a process in place that vets people. It's more than adequate. And again, let's just go to the phones. Let's go to Danielle in West Hartford. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Bless you for being as patient as you were.
I tried, but when somebody not only implies that I'm a friend of terrorists, but says I don't support America, I just, at some point, I'm going to get worked up.
Well, maybe she's used to listening to a couple of other programs on this station who are completely different from yours and are almost entirely unobjective. She probably doesn't pay attention to the news and cite all of these crazy things that the only hope we have is making. Donald Trump is not our only hope. right now, he is our worst danger, if you ask me. He is really unbalanced. Even our governor even said he's coming unhinged. He is a danger, and people who buy into him are either not very bright or are not trying to be objective in any way, or just can't think. I commend you. You are, as I said before, the best person on this radio station. And if they don't think so, they need to think again.
Well, Danielle, I thank you for the call and the compliments. And you are right. I do consider Trump a danger because I was having this discussion with a friend of mine who, believe it or not, I've known since high school, and he is a staunch Republican. Not only is he ashamed of what the GOP has become, but we have discussed politics since we were 16 years old and have always found ourselves on differing sides. But we sometimes come together on certain things. He considers himself a libertarian now. So we probably are both in the middle. But he and I agreed that a terror attack, while won't be coordinated by this administration, certainly would be welcomed because it would be a justification for everything that they've said and done. It wouldn't be that the terrorists had a plan the attack for maybe years and there was nothing we can do, because when somebody wants to do you harm, when you're walking down the street, if somebody wants to attack you, they can. They can just grab anything that's near, a bottle, a log, a trash can lid. And you won't see it coming because you assume you are safe. And that's what comes with a free society. But my point is, if a terror attack happens, Donald Trump and his administration will use that to say, see, we were right, even though it's not necessarily the case. Yes, we are always in danger. That's what comes with a free society. And if you're willing to give that up, then you're willing to give up what America represents. And that's living in fear. 888-574-2723. That's the number. Up next, we'll continue the conversation. That is the number. Should you want to get in on the conversation and maybe cast accusations my way, I'm big enough to take it, even though some of you might say otherwise.
Oh, you are such an ass.
At the beginning of the show, I talked about how we didn't keep focus on Russia and their involvement and perhaps the idea of sanctions. Well, now reports are coming out that National Security Advisor Michael Flynn privately discussed U.S. sanctions against Russia with the Russian ambassador during the month before the president took office, which is contrary to what Trump officials said. This is coming from current and former U.S. officials saying that Flynn's communications with the ambassador were interpreted by some as inappropriate and potentially illegal, signaled to the Kremlin that it could expect a reprieve from sanctions. The Obama administration put those in late December for its alleged interference in the 2016 election. The spokesman for Flynn saying indicated that while he has no recollection of discussion the sanctions, he couldn't be certain that the topic never came up. That is a far cry from saying, no, it didn't come up. I would think that something as important as sanctions against another country, should they come up in conversation, maybe, just maybe, would be in your memory. But this is the good old, I forgot. Flynn did not discuss anything having to do with the decision to expel diplomats or impose censure against Russia, he said in an Vice President Pence said in an interview. And he said to suggest otherwise is to give credence to some of these bizarre rumors that have swirled around the candidacy. So now you are bringing in the Vice President, who perhaps wasn't telling the truth. Now, they had been denying this, but yesterday when that spokesman said that he had no recollection and couldn't be certain, is a complete different story. On Wednesday, he denied, this is the day before, denied he had discussed sanctions. And when asked if he had ever done so, he twice said no. That is a change within 24 hours. And if you wonder if this is a big deal, well, look up the Long Act, or the Logan Act, I'm sorry, and see if that has anything to do with it. Not to mention obstruction of justice charges if any sort of correspondence was deleted. And this wouldn't be the first time the Russians have apparently violated the Logan Act, 1968 during Nixon, 1980 during Reagan. And the thing is, we didn't find out about it until years later, but this time, we're ahead of the game. 888-574-2723. And this will have consequences. The Republican Party will at some point have to choose between its future and sticking with Trump, as Jason Chaffetz of Utah found out at a town hall meeting last night, which I'll get to in just a second. Let's go to Ken in Bloomfield. Good morning, Ken. Ken, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go right ahead.
Okay, so the two comments ago, a lady said that he hurt relations with Australia. I mean, he calls Australia and they tell you you got to take 1,200 refugees, that you're trying to not take any refugees, and he has to take them and he didn't even know about it. I mean, and then he kind of hangs up the phone because he's a bit disgusted. I think is not really hurting relationships, just being in shock, more or less.
Ken, if I were to have my producer hang up on you, Ken, Ken, if I were to have my producer,
we're bankrupt. You're paying taxes you can't afford, and he wants to take in more refugees. I mean, you know, there's no guy like Malloy.
Ken, if I were to have my producer hang up on you during your speech there, during your comments, how would that make you feel? What would that do for our relationship?
Didn't hang up. He left the call early. He said it's done. I can't believe it.
All right, Kristen, you can hang up on Ken. We'll see how that goes with Ken.
I did.
Thank you.
No problem, man.
And Ken, I didn't want to do that, but I'm doing it as an example. And those of you who can think I'm mean.
Oh, you are such an ass.
There is something called manners, decorum, being polite, any number of things. And that agreement for the refugees we made was made by the previous administration. And the GOP and Trump himself they don't accomplish anything. What they are doing, what their mission is to undo. And it is easier to undo than it is to do. I am sitting in front of an expansive mixing board with multiple inputs. I could play sounds. I could bring up the television. I could play CDs. I could play it all at the same time. I could have 20 channels of sound coming through this thing all at once from multiple sources. And if you were to open this thing up and see the spaghetti pile of wires that it is, it's confusing, and it took someone hours upon hours to do this in multiple studios. I could lift open this thing and rip out all those wires and undo it in under 10 seconds. I could destroy this and undo everything it took to create it. And that is what Trump and the GOP represent. They are not accomplishing anything. It's easy to say we're going to not do this. We're going to undo Obamacare. We're going to get rid of the EPA and all these other things. Things that are in place for a reason. So ask yourself what they're actually accomplishing. And yes, the previous administration agreed to it. There's no reason for Trump to not uphold that agreement, other than him being a hard-nosed, just stubborn old man who thinks he's right about everything. And yes, Ken, calls matter. Relationships matter. And if you think 1,200 people coming over a period of time is really that big a drain on the economy, well, you really don't understand economics of scale. Let's go to Bob in Suffield. Good morning, Bob.
Yeah, good morning. How you doing?
Doing all right. How are you?
Good. I just want to disagree with you on Trump's immigration, you know, executive order.
Okay.
Okay. Do you ever see a German strap himself to a suicidal belt? And do you ever see a Irish...
Germans commit crimes, well, Germans commit murders.
But I mean, every terrorist attack has been Allah Akbar.
What was Dylan Roof? What was the guy in Canada? What were they?
Those are
terrorist attacks?
But what's more consistent? Who creates more...
What's more consistent? More, white
hold
people...
On, let me finish.
Timothy McVeigh. What was Timothy McVeigh?
Oh, yeah, now you're going back. We're talking about...
Now I'm going back.
Years.
I'm sorry. Well, you're saying that they're all... Sandy Hook?
No, I didn't say all of them.
When Columbine?
Look what happened in Europe. Look what happened in San Bernardino. What happened in Orlando? You want to go on and on and on? You know, we talk about a religion. A religion's supposed to be, you know, peace, love.
Do you know the word zealot?
Their religion is a religion of hate and death.
Do you know zealot? Do you know the word zealot? Do you know the word zealot?
What's that?
Do you know the word zealot?
Well, you know what? Well, like that lady earlier called you whatever it was. I'm not a zealot. I'm only giving you. Trump is trying to secure this country. And you know what? Guess what? Because the Democrats are pulling off what they're doing, Eddie. And I like you a lot. I really do. We disagree. I'm a conservative. I believe in a lot of liberal issues.
How is Trump protecting us from Dylann Roof?
Trump can't do no wrong. When do you ever talk positive about the guy? You never do.
Because he hasn't done anything worthwhile.
When have you talked positive about Trump?
Because he hasn't done anything worthwhile. What has he done positive?
No, I'm asking you a question. See, that was your answer. He's done nothing worthwhile.
He hasn't.
You're from a Democratic liberal stadium, and you're going to stay that way yet.
I'm from the South. I'm from the South.
Yeah, but you're still, I don't care where you're from. That lady had some good points about you. And not all of it. I don't agree with her that she should have called you a terrorist. But she does have some right issues about you standing up for the Islamic fundamentalists.
No, I'm standing up. I'm standing up for people whose rights are being violated.
Kill the infidels, Ed. It's to kill the infidels. Okay? Who's been on TV beheading these people?
Is every Muslim an extremist?
Did you forget TV about 3 years ago?
Bob.
All those people they beheaded.
Bob.
Okay, you don't see Christians doing it.
Bob.
Yeah,
is every white person a white nationalist?
No.
Is every Muslim an extremist?
No.
Then you just made my point for
me. Listen, out of a billion Muslims, there's an estimate. They estimate there's 200 million Islamic fundamentalists. So you have to vet that religion a little
bit. We're already vetting them. Do I need to go through the process of getting into this nation again, the 9 steps it takes, and how many times you can be set back to step one? I'm not going to. It's already a complicated, long, investigative process. What you are falling for is fear.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You're falling for fear. He is telling you something that isn't true because people react to fear. When was the last time a Muslim suicide bomber blew themselves up in Suffield?
Oh, now you're talking in context here. I mean, it's like me saying, when did the last astronaut land in the middle of Disney World?
In Connecticut. You're when was the last time a suicide bomber blew themselves in Connecticut? Or shot up something in Connecticut? When was the last mass shooting in Connecticut? And who was it perpetrated by? Bob?
Yeah, okay.
When was the last mass shooting in the state of Connecticut, and who was it perpetrated by?
He was sick. Okay.
All right, thank you. No, we're done. He was sick. He gets a pass. He was sick. So these religious extremists maybe aren't sick. Maybe that that's just the religion. There aren't extremists of other types, whether it's white nationalism or Christian extremists. It's absurd to me. Christian just reminding me of the killing in Norway, 85 people killed by a right-wing extremist. That wasn't a Muslim. Let's go to Ron in Hartford. Good morning, Ron. Ron, are you there?
Good morning, Ed. Listening to your program, love your program.
Thank you. I enjoy
listening to your program. Hey, listen, this guy Zero and the other guy Ken and this guy, this knucklehead that was just on, these are Trump worms. Either that or these are just idiots. That voted for Trump, and they just can't see anything but Trump. Those are the ones that they buy that fear nonsense and stuff like that, and they call your radio up just to make fools out of themselves. And another thing, too, you were saying that you'd like to be one of those phantom shoppers. Man, you got the best job in the world. As long as we have an idiot like Trump in the White House, my friend, you have a job.
Well, Ron, I thank you. I appreciate the kind words. Have a good weekend. But the thing is, what I will do does not just apply to Trump. If I'm still on the air 4 years from now and he is swept out of office, or even if he gets impeached within that time and a Democrat takes over, I will be just as harsh on them. The thing is, this show started a year ago, January 4th of last year, and that was during the election cycle. What people don't know is the criticisms I had for President Obama when it came to our privacy, when it came to drone strikes and whether or not an American citizen deserves their day in court, when it came to any number of things I had issues with. But the Republicans didn't let him do anything for the last year, so my focus was on what was happening in the moment, which was the election. And now Donald Trump is in office. So that is my focus. If it was a Democrat, I would be just as critical should it deserve criticism. And then my previous caller, Bob, a moment ago, said I can't say anything nice about him because there is nothing nice to say. He is treading. He is working with fear. He is trading in on your fear, and people are buying it wholesale. It is the simplest way to motivate people. Give them an enemy. And it's wrong. When you step back and look at it, it is wrong, statistically. When he says crime is higher than it's been in 40-plus years, that's a lie. When he quotes an article that he says helps his position, actually, that's a lie. Because that article didn't say that, and the author said as much. He is a man born into privilege who has nothing in common with any one of us, but says he is the only one that can change things. Never, ever, ever believe someone who says they are the only one that can do something. I said that at the beginning when this show launched. I said about these politicians, they have us, all of them, all politicians, especially when it comes to re-election, say that they're the only ones that can get something done. That is not true. It is not true at all. The skills when it comes to being a politician should be the ability to communicate, listen, and compromise. But what it requires now is, I mean, Trump's already running for a re-election. He already registered. You, those of you who complain about people constantly, politicians constantly running for office again, he's already registered. Never trust someone who tells you they're the only one that can do something. I am not the only one that can fill this time slot, 10 to noon. I am not the only one that can do this job. I could be replaced in a second. Same for them. So when you buy it hook, line, and sinker that Donald Trump is the only solution, again, a man born into privilege, a man who knows nothing of your experience or my experience or anyone beneath him's, which is a lot of people, their experience, and he claims to understand and know, this is a man who's never had to wait in line for anything, has never had to want for anything, who, if he complains, gets his way, when it comes to business, bullies his way through things, shorts people on their contracts. This is not somebody you should trust. He is the definition of a snake oil salesman, and when he tells you he's the only one, like, that's line one from the con man's handbook. Let's go to Kate in West Hartford. Good morning, Kate. Kate, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good morning. Go right ahead.
Good morning, Ed. Thank you first for taking the call. Secondly, I have read the president's executive order. I assume you have also.
Which one? He's written quite a few.
No, I'm talking about the one on immigration.
The immigration one, yes.
Okay. Who drew up the seven countries that are listed in that executive order?
I would assume Bannon.
No, they came from Obama. Obama put those seven countries together before he left office. It was probably beginning of 2016.
But he did not implement it, did he? Donald Trump spent an entire year talking about how ineffective, how bad President Obama was. So why would he then pick up a torch that Obama left?
No,
answer me.
He did this to start, give him an opportunity to fix the vetting system. These seven countries have no way of vetting people themselves.
Where did the 9/11 the terrorists come from?
Well, that's been thrown around so much.
Saudi Arabia. A number of them came from Saudi Arabia. Were they on the list?
Well,
why wouldn't they be?
Now listen, this executive order is a temporary order. It's not.
So is the Patriot Act, and the Patriot Act has now become permanent.
No, he can change it, or they can go through the courts and change it.
And that the courts have spoken at this point 3-0, saying Donald Trump is wrong.
Well, they didn't do it.
Right, of course.
Way.
You have an answer for everything. If it doesn't go your way, you've got an excuse for
exactly
everything.
That's exactly the way you
said. No, because I'm asking you, if Donald Trump believed President Obama was so bad, then why would he pick up where he left off in this case?
No, those seven countries should have been investigated before they put it into the document. I agree with that. And I'm not happy with the way it was rolled out. However, it is a temporary ban. It is not a permanent ban. And
but
Obama
an illegal...
pulled those seven countries together.
An illegal temporary ban is still illegal. I thank you for
it's
the call.
Not...
I got to hit a break. 888-574-2723. If you're saying it's not illegal, so far the courts agree. If it goes to the Supreme Court, if it goes 4-4, it'll get kicked back down. It'll be upheld. That's just the way life is. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll be right back. It's Ed Says on the Talk of Connecticut. And we are back on this Friday, February 10th, 2017. Let's go right back to the phones. Daryl in Hartford. Good morning, Daryl. What do you have to say?
Yeah, I heard on another radio program, they had a guest from the Center for Immigration Studies. And the guest said that roughly 90% of all Arabic speakers who come in for immigrate to this country go on some form of government assistance, government welfare programs, and that immigrants as a whole, something like a little over 40% of all immigrants who immigrate to this country are on some sort of government benefits or welfare programs. Second, you had a woman on from last week who was a Muslim who said that Muhammad was great to Jews. Well, Muhammad actually wiped out the Jewish communities of Arabia in his lifetime, and they've never come back to Arabia. Why don't you ask, people that have immigrated from Muslim nations who aren't Muslims what they think about living in a Muslim-controlled society, as far as blasphemy laws, conversion, child marriage laws, a problem with child marriages. You also mentioned the Salem witch trials. Did you know that those who actually put an end to the Salem witch trials were ministers and pastors who said that those who were conducting the trials were conducting it not according to biblical standards? That the Inquisition primarily happened in Protestant countries and among secular courts in Europe. And it wasn't a real problem in Catholic courts because the Inquisition was only concerned with those who weren't Muslims or weren't Jews or those who converted to Catholicism. And those Inquisition courts were actually held to be better courts than the secular courts or the Protestant courts. That you couldn't, you could only interrogate for 15 minutes. There could be no bodily harm to life or limb. And there were actually cases of people who were dying out and they actually chose to commit crimes in order to be in Catholic prisons because of how well they were treated there.
So you hit a lot of points, Daryl. Which one do you want me to address first? Because let's go backwards. From what you're just saying, are you implying that you would prefer to live under a religious law as they used in Salem that because those courts were fairer?
Well, Thomas Jefferson said the God that gave us life gave us liberty.
But just no, just give me a yes or no question or answer.
I would
because if your answer is yes, because if your answer is yes, then you are basically advocating for those countries you mentioned that live under Sharia law or some other Muslim law that has things that we find to be deplorable. You are asking for the same exact thing. You are asking for a religious state. And then let's take your Muhammad story and the idea of those people who live in countries that are under Muslim law, whether it's Sharia or maybe some less extreme version. Now, can you put into your head why people are trying to escape that? Maybe people who are Muslim don't necessarily identify with that extreme version of it, and that's why they are trying to immigrate here. Can you wrap your head around that, or are all Muslims evil in your eyes?
There's a difference between Muslims and Islamists. I'm worried about Islamists. I'm not worried about Muslims. I'm worried about those who believe in Sharia law and believe that Sharia law, you have to respect Sharia law and not the Constitution, U.S. Constitution.
Well, I'm worried about the same thing. I'm worried about religious zealots of all stripes, regardless of its Muslim, Islam, Christian, it doesn't matter. And we're seeing, the thing is, many people would rather see a...
Well, some are worse than others.
Are they? Is a woman walking around with a scarlet letter any worse, any better? No.
Well,
there's a reason we have separation of church and state. And every time I see a politician or someone who supports them get up there and talk about how the Bible says this or church courts were better or more fair, I have to just shake my head and go, no. That's not the case. You can practice whatever religion you want and don't do harm to anyone else. That is a good rule. Anybody who breaks that rule should not be welcome, but anybody trying to escape rule like that should be welcomed. And if you have a problem with that, if you have a problem with families and children trying to escape Sharia law, you are the one that needs to look inward and maybe ask yourself what kind of person you are.
What type of drain on the society they're going to be as far as the welfare system?
Oh, my God. And those numbers you cited, I'd have to see the actual numbers. Because guess what? Also, don't believe everything you hear on the radio. Thank you for the call. You're citing numbers. You're not providing them. And yes, how long are they on welfare? You didn't say that. So, yes, 90% maybe get assistance to get started. How long are they there? Because then let's go look at the numbers of how many of these immigrants start businesses. Because those are pretty high. I don't have them in front of me, but you want to go get them and compare them? You can't just give the headline. Don't just say, oh, they get assistance. Say for how long. And then compare that to maybe other citizens, natural-born citizens in the United States, and how long they stay on the dole. That does it for today. Hopefully I'll be able to have a nice, calm weekend. I thank everyone for contributing. And for some of you, you'll agree with this.
Oh, you are such an ass.
That was for you, Christian. Have a great weekend, everyone.